From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made in 2011 in Buffalo when a businessman looked out his office window at an unkept space between a hockey arena and a river. "It's just dirt and rocks," his wife said. He responded, "If they could just plant some grass, you know, at least make it look like someone cared." Well, that's what they did. And the couple I'm talking about is Terry and Kim Pegula. Once the city of Buffalo planted grass in that area, they added chairs, and the chairs led to people just hanging out there. Gradually, this once-forgotten space transformed into what is now known as the vibrant canal side in Buffalo. And as Kim Pegula says, it all started with some grass. Leaders in Rochester are hoping to jump on the Buffalo bandwagon when it comes to revitalizing the waterfront. That's the goal behind the Rock the Riverway proposal. You heard from project leaders on this program earlier this month, and in the weeks between that conversation, they heard from you about what you'd like to see for Rochester's Riverway. More than 100 people turned out to share their views at the project's first public meeting on March 8th. New York State has pledged $50 million for Rochester to develop its riverfront, and that first public forum demonstrated just how passionate the community is about this issue. On this program, project leaders promise that the proposal is not a done deal, and they're open to changes and criticism. So, on today's program, we are giving you the floor. Do you like what you've seen so far? Where is the untapped potential? Is there anything in the proposal that you think is unrealistic? Now, keep in mind that time is rather short because the state wants project leaders to finalize its proposal before the end of May. So, our guests are going to weigh in this hour with their thoughts, and we invite you to do that as well. Joining me in studio today, Maria Fergiuelli, the Executive Director of the Community Design Center Rochester. Welcome back.
Thank you. Hi, Megan.
Jason Partika is Chair of the Bus Innovation Committee for Reconnect Rochester. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And Brendan Ryan is an engineer and a board member for the Rochester Cycling Alliance. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Michael Bowler is an associate professor of biology at St. John Fisher College. He's the director of the college's sustainability program, and he's also a board member for Genesee Riverwatch. Welcome to you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Genesee Riverwatch.
So Genesee Riverwatch is a local organization that wants to be the voice of the Genesee River. It came out of the Center for Environmental Initiatives as the major focus of CEI. We've rebranded to really take on that project as being the thrust of all the work that we're doing. We're trying to clean up the river, trying to reduce the sediment pollution, and provide opportunities for education and community engagement with the river and help with access and things like that.
Great. And I know that Genesee River Watch is not currently part of Rock the Riverway. Do you hope to be part of those conversations as the initiative moves forward?
We did help with the last engagement on the 8th. We were one of the organizations that did facilitate some conversations. We certainly have lots of interest in the river, and we do hope to do what we can to help make this be a really successful project.
Great. Listeners, the phone is already starting to ring. I am not surprised. So I'll invite you to call the program 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@wxxi.org. And you can also find me on Twitter at mmacmedia. Before we get to your calls, I just want to go around the table and ask each of our guests what their general thoughts are on Rock the Riverway. And I'll start with Maria, because if you go on the city's website and you look at the image gallery for that public meeting, front and center is Maria Fergiuelli in one of those photos. So what was the vibe like during that public meeting, Maria?
Oh, I thought it was just very, very positive. I think people were really interested in being able to learn about what's being proposed, but especially are very happy to be asked and asked to contribute, asked to make their comments. So we were overwhelmed with the participation and in general, many, many good comments, very, very positive vibe.
I know you were involved with the Charette in Shalott to help redevelop the Port of Rochester. Do you feel that Rock the Riverway has some of the same excitement as the Charette did? I was at the Charette, and I can say that there were so many people who turned out and offered really solid, tangible ideas. Did that happen at that public meeting, and was the vibe similar?
I think there was a great energy, a very good vibe, a different kind of event because it was only one public meeting with a limited amount of engagement, which is absolutely a great start. But we certainly hope that there'll be more public engagement in a way that helps to facilitate more in-depth conversations and exchange more information. But yes, both had really positive energy and both had great feedback.
Michael, I know you support this project. What's most exciting to you?
I think it's the opportunity to really bring the river back into the focus of the region. So we have such an amazing natural resource, which is the Genesee River, which flows right through the heart of everything that happens around here. For too long, we've maybe neglected it, and we're looking at this opportunity to really generate the political will, the community will, to turn it into something great and really put it back where it should be as a focus.
And Jason, I saw a tweet that you sent when we were asking for feedback about Rock the Riverway. You're a board member of Reconnect Rochester. I know there's a particular project that you have some concerns about, but before we hear about that, is there anything that you're really excited about with the proposal?
I do like a renewed focus on the river in general. I think in the past 10 years, we almost never talked about the river. It's neglected. And a lot of the projects incorporate a lot of bike connectivity, which is really important to us. And then just access to the river in general. You know, a lot of times it just seems closed off. The only way to get to it is to drive by it. There's no bus stops along the river, that kind of thing. So just incorporating the river more into the city is really good.
And what is the project that you have some concerns about?
The project I have concerns about is Broad Street. For people not familiar with it, Broad Street is a bridge that looks like it has two layers down on it. The bottom layer is the original Erie Canal decks. That's where the Erie Canal crossed over the Genesee River. And then a deck above was placed for cars, and the old Rochester subway went underneath it once the canal was diverted downtown. And I personally think that the history of the subway is something that hasn't been discussed fully. And, you know, it seems like we're kind of, it's not being incorporated at all into the new design. We're going to tear it off. We're going to rewater the canal, which, of course, Rochester is a canal town, so that has some historical value too. But it seems like the subway is slowly being erased with each new development that goes on downtown.
So, listeners, just to give you some background on that particular project, if you want to check out the city newspaper piece on Rock the Riverway from March 7th, on page 8 and 9, you'll find a list of all of the projects. There's more than 24, and they've broken it down in a way that's really easy to read. So check that out. The project that Jason is talking about is the Aqueduct Reimagined and Library North Terrace section. So the Broad Street Aqueduct and land on the east side of the river between the Riverside Convention Center and the Rundell Library, they're expecting it to be $43 million in public investment. That's what's required, and $106 million in potential private investment. Here's the proposal. Remove Broad Street across the river, which is now actually a deck on top of the 1840s Erie Canal Aqueduct. In its place on the aqueduct, create a pedestrian walkway with water or green space large enough for community events. On the east side, stabilize and improve the library's north terrace to create outdoor public space for a cafe, library programs, and other uses. So, Jason, your concern is that we're losing some of the historical significance of the subway tunnel. And they're also, in your perspective, it might be dangerous for bikers and walkers.
Yeah, we haven't seen like really good like engineering plans for any of these projects yet. So we've seen a lot of nice drawings, but going across the new bridge, we see like a really steep staircase, and that's it. You don't see any access for bikes. I don't see any access for wheelchairs. And it just hasn't really been laid out yet. You know, is there going to be an elevator there? Is there going to be some really long zigzaggy ramp that makes it like unattractive to go down there? That kind of thing. So if we could see more engineering plans, or if we could speak to that, that would be really helpful.
I think if a representative from the city were here, they would say, these are just ideas, these are just drafts, and we're looking to hear from the community. Just like the show, listeners, again, you can call in. And they reminded us several times on that program on March 1st that they are open to changes. So something to keep in mind, but it's good to express some concerns while we're still in the planning stages. Brendan, as an engineer and a member of the Cycling Alliance, I'm sure you have some priorities, but you also have some concerns. Tell us about that.
Well, I think overall the most important overarching goal we need to be thinking about in doing this project is to focus on places that already work and have burgeoning possibilities, and not try to be manufacturing anything too large that doesn't already exist. Build on what the community has, because that's, you know, if it's already working now in some way, all we can do is make it better, and that's going to have a lot better overall potential than trying to create something entirely new that we don't know if it's going to work or not.
In some of our communication before the show started, you mentioned that you have some concerns about what's being prioritized.
I do. I think that, you know, there are a lot of big ticket items that are being, or a few big ticket items that are being sold as, you know, some of the biggest cornerstones of this project, such as the convention center and the improvements to the Blue Cross Arena and things like that, that are really focused for the majority of it on people outside the community, people that are going to come in to drive in to various different events, concerts, conferences. And I think it's more important that we focus really on, you know, the small improvements to existing facilities that are really going to improve life for city residents.
Maria, how do you feel about that? What is your, do you agree, disagree?
Well, yeah, we had the speaker we had last year in our Reshaping Rochester lecture series, Kim White. She made a great statement, which I think is something that is very important for community. And her statement was, we designed our city for our residents, and the tourists came because of that. Too often we make a focus of outside people as being the driving factor, where, in fact, if we create a really great space that serves the needs of your community, other people will recognize that and other people will be attracted to it. And I think that's the right way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Michael, what do you think?
We have certainly some opportunities to create some new things. So there's certainly maybe not enough access to the river. These are things that they've pointed out. And, you know, we have, you know, certainly places on our river that have good access. So building upon that throughout the river, of course, we have some natural barriers to connectivity on the water, which you want to try to avoid. You know, certain dams and waterfalls are not good to go over. But thinking about how we can really build upon, like you said, the opportunities that we have. But I would probably say that there's some things that we're missing as well. We don't have any good educational space that's really designed to build some programs for students and the community. We could certainly improve on the river access, like throughout.
I know connectivity is a big issue with this project, because if certain pieces of the project do move forward, that determines if other pieces can move forward. Everything is interrelated. There are big connectivity issues with the river and the space. Maria, are there any conversations being had about prioritizing groups of projects together so we can make progress rather than see, you know, project, you know, I could list any of them, but maybe number one, number four, or number seven. But then in the end, we're just building individual spaces and not adding to the general connectivity of the river.
Well, I think that's probably the task that is before the advisory board that's been assembled. So, you know, figuring out what the priorities are and how, which ones provide the greatest amount of leverage is probably what they're really going to be trying to figure out in the next couple of months. But we know that the city has put a great effort into creating the Riverwalk that exists in great stretches along the river and on both sides, but it's been difficult to find those areas where the links need to be made. And I think from the public input meeting, we found that the public really put a lot of value in having those connective pieces completed, because it's great to have this resource, but until it's connected, it really doesn't present the tremendous value to the community that it really can. So I think that was identified, connectivity, making sure that that river walk on both sides of the river is continuous, and that itself will act as a link to the communities that are along the river. And I think we should look at the river as a link as well, the various ways that the link serves as a link from the neighborhoods and communities that are along it. So.
Michael?
So one of the other things that came out of the public meeting was the connection of the neighborhoods to the river, not just along the river. So that's just, I wanted to bring up that, you know, the advisory board is very cognizant of the fact that they want to bring people and serve that local community and figure out ways to bring people down to the water.
Great. Well, up first on the phones, which I know we'll have a lot of calls this hour, so we'll get right to your calls. This is Douglas in Rochester. Go ahead, Douglas.
Well, good afternoon, and it's wonderful to see so much focus on the river. There's some interesting experiences that could be provided to residents that I don't see in the plan. Many years ago, I actually walked out into the middle of the river between Broad Street and Court Street. It's an amazing experience. The water's low, and the angle of reflection of the sky is such that the water looks blue. When you're looking at it from above, it's brown. And the walkways that are presented do not provide this blue experience. And all of the rough rock in the water creates white noise. It's a totally different world. What I'm encouraging is the kind of walkway that Paris has along the Seine, where your feet are merely a foot above the water. And people have said, oh, but that's going to be flooded much of the year. Well, so what? In Paris, they just take a hose and wash off the mud, and it creates a wonderful experience that would be far better in Rochester than having this $4.5 million cantilevered walkway many feet above the water, where you don't really participate in the experience. There's some other unique features that are not dealt with here. Underneath the library is the reservoir for the Johnson Seymour Mill Race. It's a very interesting feature. I've seen nothing about developing an interesting experience in that space that will just be kind of warehoused under the present plan. It's good to see restoration of the 1842 aqueduct, but Rochester actually had an earlier aqueduct in 1823, and part of that survives, totally buried. Nobody knows about it, but it is just to the north of the present aqueduct, and it curved around at a sharper angle to go across the river. And because people are unaware of it, it's just totally covered up in the plans, and what's there would be destroyed by pilings for the new buildings. And I'm encouraging that this be archaeologically excavated and highlighted. Same with that RG&E building, which appears to be demolished, but below grade level, that is a relatively intact set of amazing stonework of the 1829 Hervey Ely flour mill. And the Johnson Seymour Mill Race used to, well, still does go through there. And walking through there is like a scene out of Phantom of the Opera. It's extraordinary. And you can see on the riverside the water coming back into the river. Here again, something that is to be obliterated, but is a very interesting part of Rochester history and would make the visit to Rochester for conventioners far more interesting. Well, and these are underground features, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, great, Douglas. Thank you. There's a lot for us to talk about there. Thank you for all the history. I certainly didn't know about a lot of those things. Maria, I saw you taking notes. Are any of these pieces addressed in the proposal that's been drafted online? One sounds familiar to me, but you know more about it than I do. So,
the walkway across the river, you know, creating that pedestrian connection between Cornhill and the east side of the river, that's an interesting proposal. That may be a way to provide that at water level kind of experience that you're talking about. Of course, the concern here is always that our culture has this issue with liability that really limits some of the amazing experiences that can be created, in other parts of the world. So I'm sure that's a concern. But to create authentic spaces is really the goal of every community. How do they differentiate themselves? And certainly we have a lot of great things to work with here in Rochester. So, is there a way that these opportunities can be, brought forth in some other proposals, or perhaps they should be focused on? That would be great. I'm not familiar with anything that's currently using those opportunities in these proposals.
Douglas, if you're still listening, make sure you send your feedback to the city. You can leave your, and this goes for everyone, you can leave your comments at cityofrochester.gov/rocktheriverway or on Twitter at rocktheriver. I talked to Alex Udelson last night from the city to ask him about the next public meeting. That hasn't been scheduled yet, but he says it will be soon. He says that they are also setting up some meetings for stakeholders and neighborhood groups in the affected areas over the next couple weeks, beyond those generic open public meetings. So there will be chances for neighbors, as Michael was saying, to jump in and talk about what's important to them and their spaces as well. So feel free to leave your comments online or on Twitter. Jason, what do you think about some of the untapped potential that we have? What would you like to see that may not be in this proposal right now?
Well, I agree a lot with what Doug had to say about them. We have a lot, it sounds like a lot of underground space, for lack of a better word, that's underutilized. And it really is kind of just a part of Rochester's legacy. And you know, anything that connects those and gets people into there would be great. It seems like a lot of it is getting lost, too. Something that hasn't been mentioned is the convention center. I know as part of these projects, they want to expand the convention center. And, you know, if you look at it, you know, Doug was talking about the RG&E building there. If you look at the new drawings, the convention center is expanded over it instead. And I kind of, one of the things I think needs to be spoken to more is, you know, what is the benefit of a greater convention center, you know, as opposed to a lot of these historical things that are really great to explore and really capture a lot of people's imagination about downtown living.
I think we explored some of that during the charrette, Maria. People have grand ideas, these wonderful post-it notes that they were putting on the walls and drawings that they were putting together. And if you look at some of the renderings for Rock the Riverway, you're seeing fantastic images here. There's a pedestrian bridge with islands below it with some green space for people to walk. And I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm not trying to be negative. But how realistic do you think some of these are? I'll start with you, Brendan. Do you think that just looking at some of these ideas and knowing what the price tag is, do you think we can get there?
Well, I mean, I think overarchingly, you know, you can do anything that you can pay for. So it all depends on how much money we can get. But that, I think that really leads into, you know, what should we prioritize the most? What is going to provide us the most benefit for the amount of money? Because, you know, we're not a very wealthy city, you know, and we all know that. So what's really going to give us the biggest improvement for our dollar amount? And I think that any of them could theoretically be done because it's all just a matter of how much money you can get, but could and should may not be the same in this case.
So the overall price tag for this entire draft plan is $500 million over 10 to 15 years. The state, again, awarded $50 million to the project. Alex Udelson from the city says it's unlikely we'll get to that $50 million number. He calls it the Cadillac plan, but he says we got to start somewhere. We have to provide some ideas for people to react to. But I know, Maria, you look at this in a different way. You're hoping that feedback can come from the ground up rather than a proposal that gives community members something to react to. Is that correct?
Yes. I think when Mr. Duffy was here last time talking about, you know, having bold plans and taking chances on things. We know, as Brendan said, that things that happen organically have a greater potential for success. So being able to leverage that, I think, is a tremendous value to the community. And, you know, we've been engaged in neighborhoods and communities along the river for quite a number of years. We've had community design charrettes in the Cornhill neighborhood, Maplewood neighborhood, Southwest River area, downtown in 2007, and the Southwest Rochester Plex neighborhood. And through these community design charrettes, residents have identified their desire and need to have access to the river, and that has led to some change. So the project for the West Riverwall Master Plan came from the Cornhill community design charrette, and that is one of the projects that is included in this Rock the Riverway plan. But I do believe that that is proves the success of having undergoing this process of community engagement, and understand that the process of community engagement isn't the charrette process isn't a planning exercise, but it is a way to build education, a way to capture feedback, and a way to really activate the community to have a knowledgeable understanding of what's being proposed, what the strategies are that we're trying to use to make the city vibrant. And really get the whole team, you know, get your team on board for all these wonderful projects that we hope to have here.
Michael, when you were at the meeting, based on some of the suggestions and feedback that you heard, if those were to be incorporated into a plan, this is all hypothetical, would it look drastically different than what we're seeing now that's come from the city?
I would say that there would be differences, obviously. We would hope that the, well, from my environmental perspective, my sustainability perspective, I would hope that there would be a lot more thought to green infrastructure and getting features that would actually benefit the water quality. The caller mentioned the brown water and how it can look different from different perspectives. But one of the things that I think would be really important for any of these projects is to try to continue to improve the water quality. We've made great strides in recent years. But to continue to improve it upstream, where we can make fewer erosion events occur and really turn that brown water, it's always going to be a little brown, but it could be a lot less brown than it is right now, improve that water quality. And if by incorporating a lot of these sustainable features, we could bring nature back into the conversation a little bit more than what I think we see with the proposals that are coming out of Rock of the Riverway.
Okay. Jason, how about you? Do you think what we'll see eventually, what lands on the governor's desk in May, will be drastically different than what we're seeing in the draft plan provided by the city?
I'm sure they're going to pick and choose a couple of things. I was looking at it earlier, and it's funny how none of them really add up to an even 50. Like, even if you wanted to just focus on Broad Street and both sides of Broad Street, that's more than 50. A bunch of the other plans, I just couldn't get there. But I'm sure they'll find something. One of the things I hear a lot, and I'd like to hear more about it too, is I think a lot of people want more opportunities to get across the river. I know just a segue to like transportation in general, it's easy to get across the river downtown, but once you get north and south of downtown, there's just two bridges and that's it. So I would hope that there'd be more opportunities for bridges downtown, and maybe we get some of those going to see the governor.
I'll ask the cyclist the same question. Was it tough for you to get here today from where you were coming from?
Well, I'm on the same side of the river where I came from today. But no, I think that's a valid. I mean, the currently downtown, there's relatively decent access, especially because of the recent efforts by the city engineering department to turn Broad Street into two-way protected bike lanes. And I think that's an extremely important link for us to maintain as we talk about the potential for removal of Broad Street. We're talking about the potential removal of what I would consider to be the best bike access across the river and needing to have a strategy to maintain that, as well as expanding connectivity across the river towards the north neighborhoods, where really you have pretty much nothing between Lyle Ave and Driving Park. And same with, between Lyle and downtown, there's not much there. And same, as it goes farther south. So I definitely, a connection across the river is definitely important.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, your emails are starting to pile in, so we'll get to those after we take our short break. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255 to share your ideas for Rock the Riverway, what you would like to see in terms of maybe a river walk, something like they have in Chicago, maybe something like they have in San Antonio. We'll talk about those projects when we come back. I'm sure Maria has ideas about that. And any other examples that you're seeing in other cities that you think could be applied to Rochester. We want to hear from you. So, short break, more Connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Tuesday on the next Connections, the death of 14-year-old Trevion Rowe has shocked Rochester, and it has sparked calls for change in local school policy. How did it happen? Why did the district miss red flags? What can be fixed, and who is ultimately accountable? Our guests address those questions. Then in our second hour, the One Take Documentary Film Festival is back. We'll preview some of the films. Talk to you Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. During our short break, there's a lot of conversation that happens in the studio. And one of the things that Maria Fergiuelli from the Community Design Center Rochester brought up was the Performing Arts Center. And she has an idea, and this is a show about ideas. So let's go into what you were saying, Maria, about the Performing Arts Center, currently planned for Parcel 5.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to state that this is my personal opinion. This is not something that has been a survey or an official position by our organization. But in general, I look at the Performing Arts Center, and I just see this amazing plaza that opens up onto the river, and the idea that you can create a beautiful Performing Arts Center that is on the river could have some tremendous benefits for the community. So I hope that might be something that could be considered.
What do you all think about that Performing Arts Center instead of at Parcel 5 along the river? Brendan, what do you think?
I definitely think it's a good thing to consider. Parcel 5 being right on Main Street is a great place for having a space that's really open to the community, whether it's, you know, a mixed-use building or a public plaza. You know, there's many ideas that have been floated. While having it on the river in a space that might be slightly less of a pedestrian center than Main Street might actually be really feasible, because you're not necessarily trying to attract people coming off the street into a specific place that may just be a, you know, an open community space, but people are going for a specific purpose, and it could be pretty interesting to have it fronted on the river.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Toronto. I can't remember. Is it Rogers Center? I can't remember. There's a large concert venue right along the river in Toronto, or was it the lake?
Yep, the lake.
Geography. And that was just beautiful. I went to a show there with some friends a couple of years ago, and afterward we just walked along the lake, and it was a really great experience. Do you think that's realistic for us, Jason, or do you think, you know, with all the debate currently surrounding Parcel 5, we're where we're going to be for a little while? I'm trying to be... not have a conversation about Parcel 5.
Right. No, I think it's realistic. I personally would like to see, like, more construction right on the river itself. Like if you think of Water Street, there's apartment buildings and a restaurant that's built right on the river. The river, the buildings are just flush with the edge of the river. And I think, you know, if I had a magic wand that could make any development happen, I used to live on Water Street, and I worked at First Federal Plaza. So people don't know First Federal Plaza is the building with the flying saucer on it. So I'd walk down Water Street, walk across the Andrews Street Bridge, and walk through Lewis Carroll Plaza. And one of the biggest challenges of the river is the river's really, really down low. And to get right along the river, you have to go down these steps, and you're kind of invisible down there. You can't be seen from the street. You can't be seen from the businesses. And people don't feel safe down there, basically. So I would encourage development. It's probably really expensive, probably way more than $50 million. But if you could bring it up, and if building a performing arts center right on the river, you don't have that low elevation that people are afraid to go down to. And it's something more visible, and people feel safer with that kind of development.
Mm-hmm. Jumping back to the phones, up next is Michael in Geneva, listening on WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, I was calling in. What I think one of the most important things for ensuring that we can raise enough money to bring the updates needed along the river, I was looking at projects down in New York City, like the High Line and the Low Line, and incorporating the Rochester subway, which comes through near the aqueduct. What New York City has done is created the High Line, which is the raised subway park. It's beautiful. I don't know if any of you have ever been down there or walked down it. It's one of the best transformations of a shuttered subway that I've ever seen. And tying the rest of the neighborhoods into the river project, so giving it more sense of inclusion, like here's an access, you know, through to the river, and tying that in. And the Low Line is an actual proposed underground park in a shuttered underground subway line. And I think that would help tie in to the river and bring in more of a community sense, like, hey, it's not just, you know, us communities right along or directly on the river. We can tie right in and give access to this wonderful property that needs to be shown off a lot more and include other neighborhoods that might not even be interested or might, well, you know, that's not my neighborhood, so why should I care?
It's a great point. Thank you, Michael. Thanks for calling. Getting a lot of nods around the studio. Maria?
Well, the idea of having this this continuous walkway does provide that access to anyone who wants to enjoy that amenity. And if you go right now to just north of Charlotte and go on to the boardwalk that's provided there.
That's a beautiful
What is
space.
The access point there?
You can get there from River Street.
Turning Point Park.
And Turning Point Park. Boxart Street, yes.
I have never been on that stretch of trail and not run into multitudes of people. Mm-hmm. So once that trail is made a continuous connection and acts more as a pedestrian park, that would really improve a lot of the conditions of, number one, considering the safety, and number two, the connectivity. So absolutely, I think that's where you're going to get the biggest benefit to the neighborhoods along the river.
We have an email from a listener named Peter. He's a science educator in Brockport. And he has a concern about the project. He says, if the entire riverfront plan does not address the elephant in the room of weather and how people around Rochester deal with it culturally, all monies will eventually end up like the fast ferry, fade into oblivion. One only has to go to the Rock Waterway website to see the deception, although probably not intentional, or maybe it is. Rochester is not San Antonio. The graphics I saw depict only flowers, deep green grasses, trees, and beautiful times. In reality, Rochester shuts down outside culturally in November and does not emerge from its long hibernation until April. Where the artist's conceptions of the 5 months of darkness and cold and snow we experience, the weather is real. A legitimate concern. Maria, you're laughing.
I love winter. It's hard to live here and not like winter if you choose to be here. But I always, when people bring up the weather, I can tell you, at this very moment, you can go across the Big Pond and to Toronto and find that there's all kinds of activities along the waterfront. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be aware and you have to create opportunities to get people outside. We have climate change, and this winter has had its roller coasters of warm and cold. We've had amazing, sunny, warm days in the middle of winter. So not every day is dark and bleak and freezing cold for six solid months. So I think we have to just understand that we're going to have opportunities to create programs and get people out, no matter what the weather is.
I think it's fair to say that we are not San Antonio. We can't expect, you know, to turn out like some of the renderings are in the middle of January, as Peter points out. But what about Canal Side in Buffalo? There's pond hockey, there's ice skating, there's ice bikes, curling leagues. They're really building up the waterfront there. I was talking to a friend who went to Buffalo a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, yeah, we rode the water trike and then on the ice, and then we went skating, and it was great. Michael, what do you think? Could we see something like that here? We've tried before, so what's going to be different this time?
You know, I'm not super familiar with all the things that have been tried before, but I can say that, you know, we may shut down a little bit as humans, but nature keeps trucking along. Underneath the ice, there's always lots going on that we could certainly, if we bring some of that to the surface and give people an opportunity to see what's going on in nature in those winter months, there's opportunities for us to, you know, take advantage of the birds that live here year-round. You think about Birdsong Trail down in Menden Ponds Park. I can think about getting people in other parts of the river, maybe down in the gorge. It's absolutely spectacular to walk down and see the ice on the waterfalls. And that view, you know, is just something that you can't get in San Antonio. So we certainly have some advantages. And what we have, the starting point that we have to work with is so much more than what San Antonio has. I've been there. It's nice. It's really hopping. But I hesitate to call it a river. It is something very different than the beautiful natural river that we have flowing through our city.
It's a good way to look at it, Jason.
Oh, as far as winter stuff goes?
Yeah, what do you see?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the challenge and probably something that should be asked is, will there be operational funds for like snow clearing and things like that? Like if you go down there today, like when I was walking to work, usually by 8 a.m., it may or may not have been cleared. So I was wading through snow, especially those paths right along the river. The pedestrian path, that gets shut down during the winter. They put up cones and say, do not cross. So you can't use that. Would they open that up during the winter? That kind of thing. I know in the plan there is $10 million set aside for an organization that would do programming and things like that. I don't know if that includes like just some of the more boring stuff, like keeping it clean and clear, that kind of thing. So there are definitely challenges to that. But I think you're right. I think you could do, again, in the gorges, that kind of stuff. And then as far as downtown goes, you know, I know just, I guess, in defense of taking the top off of the Broad Street Bridge, they do have ice skating there in the renderings and things like that. I don't know if that's worth, you know, the connectivity through there, but I guess there is programming they could do.
I was looking at the Chicago River Walk earlier today before the show, and that city essentially shuts down outside in the winter like we do along the riverway. And the article I was reading said from, I think it was September to November, they had these heated domes where people could rent them out and have parties in there. They had like wine tastings. That went until November. And then after that, it signaled the shutdown of the Riverwalk hibernating until winter. And I'm sure that's going to happen in cities like Chicago and cities like Rochester. But should that deter us from trying to build up the area the rest of the year. How can we make it self-sustainable the rest of the year to be worth it economically? That's probably a question that's going to take more than 15 minutes, but I'll pose it because that's my job. Brendan, what do you think?
Well, I would say, there are so many opportunities. You know, we have cities all over the world that are in cold weather climates colder than ours, all of, Northern Europe, Canada. Some of the most active cold weather cities are in Canada, like Edmonton and Calgary. There are just endless options, things you can look at. I've been to conferences that are about winter cities and programming for winter cities, helping to, expand on, taking advantage of the climate we have, not saying, oh, we'll shut down for the winter, saying, okay, like, this is how we use winter to work for our advantage. The more versatile the space and the more organic the space, it kind of snowballs together. And, if you have a place that people want to go to in the summertime, they're going to want to keep going in the wintertime, especially, if you live right down the street, you're not just going to stop going outside completely. You're always going to be outside at least sometime. So, it's all about building an attractive space. And, the better it works year round, the better.
Mm-hmm. So. Michael?
You know what? I would add that our schools are in session during the winter, right? So maybe that's an opportunity for us to think about how we connect education, how we make spaces that would allow school children to have access to some of these beautiful spots, even though it might be a little bit harder the way that they're maintained now, or maybe the structures are, but making them, designing them for accessibility and giving opportunity for us to take advantage of the river for those purposes. I can tell you that when spring comes around, the water's still not that warm. The fall is beautiful, but it can be really busy. Taking advantage of all the seasons would be really good.
Mm-hmm. And I know you have an event coming up to get people involved in some of these educational ideas that you have. Tell us about that.
Yes. Genesee River Watch is putting on its fifth annual River Summit this weekend, March 24th, at the Port of Rochester in the Riverside Room. So we're actually focusing this year on educational opportunities in the watershed in the Greater Basin, and thinking about kind of giving teachers and community members and the public the opportunity to come down and learn about all the great things, whether it's Cornhill Navigation running a new program on the sand patch in the Erie Canal to link the new P12 science standards to the canal, and thinking how people can how students and teachers can come out and learn about the wildlife on the canal, or Delta Environmental, the Seneca Park Zoo, a bunch of partners, including some of the state organizations, are kind of come and really help teachers and community members understand how they can get their students and their people out to the river to learn more about it. Mm-hmm. So that's 8:30 to 4:30 on Saturday.
On Saturday. Great. Thank you. A couple comments coming in via Twitter, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. I saw Dorian Hall on the line. Not sure why we lost you, Dorian, but feel free to call back. He's a leader in the Plex neighborhood, and there are some projects developed or planned for the Plex area. And he says, the concern in Plex is safe land. There's contamination that seems to be missed. And that's a story that WXXI News has been following, among other organizations. And you can go on our website to hear about some of that. And that's something that we'll discuss on this program as well. So concerns about the Plex neighborhood, safety and contamination. And then here's Ray Ray. He says, we need to ensure creative engagement and instigating citizen-led process shaping the proposal. This cannot just be about listening to public comments and finalizing behind closed doors, organizing public participation in the actual decision-making, not solely feedback democracy. And the city is not here to contribute to this conversation, so the only thing I can do is repeat comments that they made when they were here. They said that this is an open process, and the menu of projects that they've provided is up for change. And I know there are concerns about trust and decisions being made without the community involved. So again, listeners, you can go on the website, you can go on Twitter, submit your ideas, keep going to those public meetings and expressing your opinion. Back to the phones. This is Bob in Greece. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to talk about what I think we might be missing here. Right now, there's a project called Closing the Gaps, which is to complete the trail from Buffalo to Albany Beyond for the canal. But what we don't have is that link from the canal to the downtown river area. It connects the way out by Genesee Valley Park, which isn't going to help much with this project. I think what we need to do is look at connecting at a closer location, and it can be done. If you look at the canal where it crosses Lee Road, there's still a railway bridge there, and the tracks have all been abandoned from there all the way to just next to the soccer stadium. You could basically run a trail that would run almost perfectly east and get down as close as the soccer stadium without having to ride on roads. I think they need to think about connecting that, because we meet people all the time when we're bicycling on a trail. They're traveling all across the country. They're traveling from other countries, taking the canal path, but they never see Rochester. They never see Rochester at all. They end up out by Genesee Valley Park. They don't make that northward detour to get downtown, so we miss a lot of opportunities there. I think we need to connect that, have it as an alternate route that would run along the river once the renovation is done, and make it part of the big project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks very much, Bob. Thanks for calling in.
Yep.
Maria, you're nodding. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, when we talk about connectivity, it spans a whole variety of things. One is the connectivity of the trail pieces itself along the river. The other is connectivity into the neighborhoods. Another layer of connectivity is how do we tie into other existing resources in the community, and certainly the canal is a tremendous resource. And your point is, I think, a very valid point, that any resource that we have, if we can drive people into the city center, that would be a plus, and that is one of the goals. So I would say present that idea to the city, because certainly it looks like a viable opportunity for people that are traveling along the canal to take a slight detour and come into our city. But the more connectivity we can provide, the better.
Mm-hmm. Great. Up next on the phones is Jane in the South Wedge. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, hi. My name is Jane, and I'm really appreciating this program because we're very excited about Rock the River. But I have one comment which will involve a question. Every morning, as many days of the week that I can, I take a three-mile walk around the river, starting at Ford Street, going up across Court Street, which is extremely impeded right now by Morgan Stanley apartment building. And then I go back down around Cornhill and back across 4th Street, back to my neighborhood. That path is absolutely unwalkable as soon as the first snow flies. I don't understand why we can't have a snow plow, sidewalk plower go through and keep that path open. Most of the people I see trying to navigate that path are going to work on their feet, which is what we want to encourage. And yet it's dangerous. It's ice-caked. It's snow-caked. You can't access through Erie Harbor because those paths are not plowed, although they're supposed to be. That was to give us, our neighborhood, access to the riverway. You can't go through 3 feet of snow on a path, a paved path, and then you can't walk around the river without it being plowed. So my concern is we're going to expand pedestrian travel and access to the waterway, but we're not taking care of what we already have. The second point I want to make is there are no garbage cans along that pathway, and it gets really littered. It's never picked up. I try to pick it up. I see other people try to pick it up, but there are no trash cans to put the garbage in. So those are just my two comments, and I just am thinking that if we're going to expand pedestrian access and people walking into the city to work, why aren't we able to do that with what we have now?
Okay. Thanks, Jane. Thanks for your comments. I think those are great points. We're talking about new plans, new projects that are being proposed, and we're not just talking about the final product. We're talking about maintenance, too. And as Jason mentioned, maybe that the group, the $10 million set aside for, it seems, logistical purposes and making certain management decisions and maintenance decisions, we'll take that into account. But Jane's point, let's pay more attention to what we have already and invest in that. So thanks for sharing that, Jane. We're out of time to take any more calls, but I do want to read a comment from Ann in Geneseo, who wanted to share that she's traveled all over the world and the weather is less of an issue than you'd expect. She says, just give people a reason to go out and they will. So thank you for that, Ann. And that raises some of the issues that Peter brought up. But it's like Canalside. They provided something for their residents and people are out there using it. So when Bob Duffy was on this program on March 1st, he says, Rochester has a problem. We're not open-minded enough to projects. We are too quick to be critical. And he did say, you know, some projects will not work out, but we should be open-minded and we should experiment. That could be a whole other show, how Rochester has looked at big investments and projects. But on the whole, I just want to, with the few minutes we have left, go around the panel and just share what you're most excited about this project and if you think it's realistic to get there. And I'll start with Brendan.
Well, I think, so one of my favorite parts of Rochester is has always been High Falls and Lower Falls and, you know, that area of the river. I think it's really unique. We're one of very few, if any, American cities that have a 100-foot tall large waterfall right in the center of our downtown. So I really think that the program centered around High Falls and actually improving connectivity to High Falls, as well as, you know, the potential for future destruction of the rest of the inner loop that could connect the rest of downtown to High Falls as it used to be. You know, that's some of the most important and awesome opportunity that we have with this project.
Great. Jason?
I like a lot of the stuff that's south of downtown and the connectivity it creates. The bridge with the two floating islands, I think, just looks cool and clever getting across. And I do like the expanded trails connecting. You had someone on the phone, you lost them, from the Plex neighborhood.
Yes.
But being able to get from the Plex neighborhood into downtown on bike would be a really great way to connect the city.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
You know, I'm really excited about people taking and focusing on the water and thinking about how that actually is really important to us as a community.
And big on education.
Yes.
Absolutely. Maria?
I'm excited about all of it. It's really great to see such a breadth of projects from small to large. We as a community have amazing resources that have not been that have been underutilized. Who has a historic canal that links to a north flowing river that links to a great lake that has dramatic waterfalls in between? So we have a lot to work with. Let's make it happen.
Absolutely. And listeners, keep sharing your comments with the city. They said that they are being open to ideas. So keep emailing those in, keep tweeting them, keep submitting them on the website. Our thanks to Rob Braden, our engineer, Tiana Mignon on the phones today. I'm Megan Mack. More Connections tomorrow. Talk to you then.